All right, we're on to some new information tonight. My guests are Dr. Simeon High, and I'm holding him over a little bit, and Scott Flansburgh, the human calculator. And what are we on to tonight that we haven't been in the past? Well, that human-made, human-constructed crop circles, after a short period of time, which is in itself very interesting, begin to produce anomalous events like the locking up of cameras, electrostatic readings that jump around like crazy, electronics that go bad, a lot of very strange things. Then you combine that with the mathematics, the unusual brain of Scott Flansburgh, and we're definitely on to something here. The picture is on the coasttocoastam.com website. You'll see a total of 10 circles, actually, and numbers inside. I suggest you blow it up. Leave it on the screen as we discuss it. We'll be right back. It is really interesting to me the way so many subjects on Coast to Coast AM sort of dovetail into each other. Now, in the last several weeks, we've been talking about other dimensions and mainly attributing what sightings we've had of things or creatures or whatever that appear to be coming from elsewhere. It all comes down to frequency. It all seems to come down to frequency. And here we are again tonight talking about the frequency crop circles, or the frequency that's created by the way these circles are created. Do you, Doctor, do you think that that these are created for the most part by ETs, or it's kind of a mixture? Do UFOs really have something to do with a lot of the crop circles?
Well, they certainly have in the past. You know, Colin Andrews has been on the show in the past. You know, we think of him as kind of the grandfather of crop circle research. He has a registry of 50 people that have seen crop circles form, you know, the ones that form very quickly in the early hours of the morning. And those are basically simple circles or groups of circles. And in some cases, it does appear that UFOs are connected to crop circles. At least they were in the past, maybe 30 years ago, starting with the Tully saucer nests in Australia and so forth. So, and even in the United States, there's documentation showing flying discs associated with crop circles. But it seems to me that what the ETs may have been doing was creating a learning project for humans, and it may have been part of the whole idea for us to kind of take over the mantle of crop circle creation in order to learn all these fascinating scientific and mathematical principles that we're discovering. In other words, if the ETs had kept making them, we wouldn't be having this discussion we're having now, and it's part of the process for us to learn how to do this because perhaps we're creating an advanced type of technology or it's going to lead in that direction.
And perhaps we are. We're kind of stumbling around with it, perhaps with the exception of what Scott did here. Now, is there any indication that extraterrestrials or UFOs take an unusual interest in human-created crop circles?
There are a lot of photos of UFOs around human-made crop circles, and we've had a lot of reports from human circle makers that have seen a lot of strange things at night when they've been out there. I've talked to a lot of these circle makers, and they've seen balls of light and occasionally UFOs over the fields while they're making the circles. I even had an experience once out in the fields in England seeing a very strange object that I was able to videotape for a few seconds that was awfully unidentified to me. So I think that UFOs do have an interest in the crop circles, especially, Art, if you think about it, they could get a very quick reading of our level of spiritual and mathematical development just by looking at the circles we're making to get an idea of how sophisticated we are. I mean, you just have to look at them from the air, and you can get an idea of kind of what's going on in our heads. So I think there's a lot of reasons why ETs would be interested in human circles, and we've certainly discovered a lot by making them, and I'm sure the ETs are interested in this also.
All right. Well, here's a follow-up question then. You said that certain segments of these circles produced more anomalous effects than others, right?
That's right.
Okay, then based on that knowledge, could you expand on that using those areas that had more of an effect, more of an anomalous effect than others, and create yet another circle, take it to the next level using what you learned from this circle and create something that would really be anomalous?
That's exactly right. You know, what we're beginning to see is if you create a circle with nested sort of fractal smaller circles within it,
yes,
then you tend to get more of these anomalous effects. In this case, what we found is if we took one of those outer circles and then in the double tufted circles, as I call them, that particular circle maker that helped us to do that, that was actually his idea, spontaneously his idea, to take three and make them different from the other six out of the group of nine. That if you take that and you kind of divide it into smaller and smaller groups, you're kind of getting a nested fractal pattern. And that seems to be the key to a lot of waveguide technology that we read about. And it may be a clue to why some of these circles are more kind of electronically active than others, is they kind of have this nested ratio of spacing in certain circles where they divide into smaller circles within the smaller circles. I've also actually saw it also in the Devil's Den formation in 1999 in Fifield in Wiltshire, that actually also knocked out the first time I ever saw a lot of batteries knocked out at once. It affected our batteries. It affected about five different electronic devices within about 10 minutes that I saw with my own eyes. And that also had smaller nested circles. So I think that may be a clue to why we're getting that kind of effect. And that's to do with the way waveguides work.
All right, Doctor. A lot of times, as with, for example, space travel, we have no idea when a technological breakthrough is going to come. I mean, we just don't know. But with space travel and with our space program, there have been a whole lot of technological breakthroughs that we have achieved. Do you think that study of crop circles, even in their creation, as you have done here and perhaps in the next step, will eventually produce some kind of technological breakthrough?
I'm absolutely convinced of that, yes. It really seems that the more we experiment with this, what we realize is we're dealing with an advanced technology that we're just kind of treading around on like kindergartners. We're just kind of tweaking the knobs, and then something happens, and then someone like Scott Flansburgh comes along and gives us another design, and we don't even expect it ahead of time, but something happens. You know, we're all interested right now in this idea. Can we kind of connect with this kind of universe of dark energy and dark matter? Is it just something out there, or can we actually kind of tap into it a little bit, kind of the vacuum space where all that energy is that we know about, the zero-point field and so forth? And wouldn't it be exciting if these crop circles are kind of an avenue or a kind of a way that we can kind of start contacting that sort of energy through human-made designs that aren't even that sophisticated the way we make them, but their net result is some sort of technological result. So, yeah, I actually think that crop circles are a form of advanced technology. The circle makers call it natural magic, and I think of it as a form of a natural technology that has these very advanced electromagnetic or perhaps even quantum effects. And just I want to introduce one more piece of evidence that supports that. In addition to this mass matrix, I just want to point Coast listeners to the Milton Hill Farms crop circle where Colin Andrews did a magnetometer study in year 2000. It's actually on the left side of the Opening Minds website on in the pictures link, if you click on the link for pictures. In the magnetometer study, Colin Andrews actually went out to a crop circle at Milton Hill Farms, a small town in Wiltshire, and there was a crop circle there, like a Celtic cross that was surrounding a tumuli. He didn't know the origin of this circle, but with a French engineer, Jean-Noël Aubry, they were actually able during the day to take magnetometer readings. If you look at the picture of the magnetometer readings, where you get these magnetic deviations fairly closely follows where you have the lay of the wheat in the crop circle. And so what we found from this study is that actually the crop circle changes the magnetic field alignment in the space where the crop circle is. Now, we later found out that this was a man-made circle. It was made by five people, and I was able to speak to three of them. I actually stayed in that town, Milton Hill Farms, the next year and was able to do some investigation. I'm convinced it was a man-made circle, having talked to the individuals that claimed to have made it. I talked to them separately. In this case, we had another example of a man-made circle where the analysis was done without anybody knowing what created the circle. It could have been UFOs or ionic plasmas or whatever. But the magnetometer data shows us that the actual laying down the wheat in spiral shapes actually affects the magnetic fields of the space. And in this case, within the circle, according to Colin, that magnetic north was off by 3 degrees in the swirled circles versus where it was from magnetic north outside the circle.
Dr. Hine, does it seem to matter whether a design like this is created in wheat you know, on the face of the earth, or whether you could take, I don't know, God, a big giant piece of plastic or something and lay it out on some concrete somewhere and create a design like this and come up with the same anomalous effects, or is this only done in fields of wheat?
Well, most of my experience has been in wheat fields because most of the crop circles are done in wheat. But, you know, they're also done in oats, in barley. I've been in some of those that have been made in barley.
Yes, yes.
We've had the static effects in the barley, too. And in this country, we had some in soybeans a couple of years ago over in I believe it was in Ohio or Indiana.
Do you see the direction of my question, however? Yeah. In other words, is it the actual shape only, or is it where that shape is created?
Well, that's right. And what we found in all of these, all the different plant materials create these strange effects. So it leads me to believe that it's the natural material. I think it's the crystalline structure, like the silica within the wheat, you know, and in the soil, that actually allows it to have these anomalous materials. There's a whole class of materials, Art, in material science called metamaterials. Metamaterials mm-hmm. are natural materials that have exotic properties when you kind of arrange them in a certain shape. So I see these crop circles as metamaterials. Some of these metamaterials create invisibility. You know, they're actual objects you can't see because they just bend light. And if these crop circles are bending magnetic fields or bending other sorts of energy fields or affecting the flow of electricity in the area, then they're acting like a metamaterial. And to answer your question, it's because they're based on a natural material which has a natural crystalline component within it that creates those effects rather than something like plastic. But, you know, it's a great experiment to do, and we simply don't have the answer until we, you know, create plastic in the shape of a crop circle like this, and we could see what happens.
So many questions to be answered. I mean, just the fact that you got all of these anomalous effects from a circle that you made yourself with the help of Scott is just blows my mind, and it just begs for further experiments based on particularly what you found about those specific areas. So are there plans to go to the next step?
Well, right. We've been talking with Scott to do one in this country even larger than the one we did over at Woodboro Hill. To see if we can, for Scott's purposes, to see if we can recreate the circle again, even maybe make the biggest one ever around the math matrix. And, of course, we're going to be looking very carefully when we do that to see if we can recreate some of these anomalies. Because, honestly, it's the last thing I ever expected when I started this project with my colleagues, that this was going to blow out batteries and cameras and video camcorders. I mean, I just thought we're making it. It's just going to be a man-made formation.
No, this is a definite breakthrough. Scott, are you prepared to go to the next step? If Dr. Hein wants you to go and look at what created the most anomalous effects and then sort of jump to the next step from there, are you ready to do that?
100%. I am looking forward to it. I really feel like we've figured out a way to get this idea out there. And like Simeon said, we didn't know any of this would happen. It was so exciting to hear from him out there. And just you could hear it in his voice that there was just stuff happening that was grabbing his attention. And it really inspired me to figure out what we needed to do next. So, yeah, Simeon has some great ideas. We have great opportunities even in Australia, other places, and everybody around the world. If you did this in English, most people around the world wouldn't be able to speak or understand it. But everybody on the planet understands this communication clearly.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, again, back to you. These crop circles apparently radiate energy into the air. Did you learn anything at all? Were you able to learn anything at all? I mean, is it a perfect cone, for example, going straight up from these crop circles? Is there any indication of how far up it goes? Maybe it keeps on going right through the ionosphere. I mean...
You know, it's a great question, and in fact, what we found is it happened when we were exactly over the crop circle. When that ultralight was right over the crop circle is when the camera failed and when it started malfunctioning. And I believe other pilots have found it to happen when they're right over the crop circle. Now, I've talked to Busty Taylor about this phenomenon. He's probably flown more crop circles than anybody else because he discovered some of the first ones back in 1985 when they started appearing in England. And he said it's never happened to him in his Cessna. Now, he's flying at a higher level than we're flying in our ultralight, which is, you know, the lowest altitude you can go with an ultralight is about 500 feet.
Sure.
So you can get pretty close to it. And he hasn't found it because in his Cessna, he's probably flying at a few thousand feet or higher. So maybe there is a limit to how far it goes up. Because I'll tell you something, it certainly seems that there's a limit to how far it goes out laterally in the field, across the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would make sense, perhaps, there's just a height limit to how far these energies go up. Maybe they only go up a few thousand feet or less.
I wonder how far down they go.
Well, that's the interesting thing. You know, in this Milton Hill Farms crop circle of 2000, it appeared to Colin like there were magnets buried in the ground. But we don't know that these circle makers buried any magnets. I mean, strong magnets. So he actually thought that the effect was coming from below the Earth. So it could be going above, below, and to the side at the same time. I mean, and you're right, Art. There's so much about this we don't know, but it's really exciting to play around with it and get these effects at all.
It really is exciting. I mean, everything you've told us tonight so far is exciting because this is a man-made circle. This is a man-made circle, and we're getting these effects. So
it appears that it's aligning the energy in the space, and just the way it occurs to me that Scott's math matrix kind of aligns our minds to handle mathematics in an easier way, the way he can add numbers so quickly. It appears to kind of align the space so that you're getting contact with some other type of energy or, dare I say, a dimension that you normally don't get contact with, and that's why you get these balls of light and frequent UFO sightings. It's kind of creating another sort of space there and aligning perhaps the dark energy or something like that. That idea is not so far-fetched because even Ingo Swann at the most recent remote viewing conference talked about remote viewing being connected to dark energies. In other words, our minds are kind of intertwined with this kind of dark universe that we can't see, but physicists tell us is there. Perhaps the crop circles are creating a connection to that dark energy also, and this math matrix that we made is kind of connecting in a way we never even expected would happen.
Okay, is there anything that you can name that distinguishes a real crop circle? And when I say real and genuine, I mean something made by other than man, from one made by man, because you're getting these anomalous effects with this crop circle. So that kind of puts it all back. I've heard, for example, that the wheat has molecular changes in crop circles,
right,
supposedly made by UFOs that is not present in those made by man.
Yeah, I'm not totally convinced by those particular studies. I mean, Colin mentioned the last time he was on the show. I mean, when the BLT team was given different control samples, man-made circles, and even wind damage, they weren't able to distinguish the so-called authentic ones from the man-made formations from the molecular structure. So I'm not sure we're able to do that yet. And let me just tell you, I've only been studying these since 1997. I never saw those original ones that Colin's talked about so much. I would love to see one of those original phenomena, but I think most of the ones I've seen in England were actually created by people. Of course, I can't really prove that for sure. It's just my kind of feeling about it. But it's even more interesting in some ways if humans are doing this, we're getting these effects, and the original phenomena creates these effects too, then maybe there really isn't a difference. I mean, maybe what's going on is once the formation is there, that's what's creating the energy rather than some sort of mysterious beam of light coming down from a UFO and zapping the field. Now, those exist. I mean, my colleague Ron Russell actually went out to a field in Nebraska where the farmer's wife said she was sitting on the porch and this UFO came over and this pencil-thin blue beam of light came down into the field and kind of left these zigzag patterns. And Ron went out and looked at it and he said it looked kind of like graffiti in this timothy grass. So that was sort of an energy being released by a UFO. But I suspect because we found these enlarged nodes, even in our own formations, we found that in Cheryl in 2003 where we paid a farmer and used his field to make kind of a waveguide type shape, that it's once the crop formation is there, it's kind of like a self-organizing system. You have these static charges, you have these kind of crystalline effects and perhaps these superconducting energies, and whatever it is, it kind of grows over a period of a couple of days and then it kind of starts affecting things. So that
all right, Dr. Hine, listen, we're at a break point and I'm going to let you go. I've held you over a little bit because I wanted to get all of this out. You've certainly stumbled into something very serious, Dr. Hine. I don't know what, and I don't think you know what just yet, but you've stumbled into something very serious, and I want to thank you for appearing on tonight's show.
Take care.
All right, thank you, and take care. Dr. Simeon Hine, when we come back, Scott will continue with Scott Flansburgh, the human calculator. This is incredible stuff when you think about it. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. Sure is. My guest is Scott Flansburgh, otherwise known as the human calculator, the 2001 Guinness World Record fastest human calculator. As a matter of fact, his brain works in ways that we can't even really consider. And so we'll explore that a little bit with him in a moment. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Three really gigantic topics that I want to cover with Scott Flansburg. One is September 11, 2001. Another is the Mayan calendar. And a third is numerical patterns in the Bible. That's a lot to cover in one segment, but let's try it. Scott, why did they pick September 11, 2001?
It's an amazing day, Art. Mathematically speaking, it adds up. I'll just go through some of the numbers with you. And just my experience in life is through numbers. It's like I have a pair of glasses on.
Yes.
Like the double zero on the beginning of the Matrix that just allows me to see things through numbers. And so I don't know if I'm right or wrong. I just know that this is what I see and I experience. So I'll just throw it by you. But 9/11 is the 254th day of the year. And 9/11 is all about the two towers, and that's a 1-1. It's the big number 11. And the number 11 is very interesting because it's 1-1 are the first two numbers in what's called the Fibonacci series, which is the series of numbers where you just keep adding it up. You go 1 plus 1 is 2, 1 plus 2 is 3, 2 plus 3 is 5, and it creates a pattern, and it matches everything in nature. And that's why you don't find four in nature. Four-leaf clovers are an anomaly of nature, and that's the first number that's not a Fibonacci number. So the towers represent that 1-1. It's the economic center. And New York City has 11 letters. New York is the 11th state of America. George W. Bush has 11 letters. Ramsin Youssef, I don't know if I said that right, but his name has 11 letters. The first plane that hit was Flight 11, and it had 92 passengers, which 9 plus 2 adds up to 11. The second plane was Flight 77, which is obviously 11 times 7, and they had 65 passengers on that plane, and 6 plus 5 is 11. 911 is our emergency number. At 911 adds up to 11. 9/11 is the $20 bill. You and I talked about this once before, Art. You know, everybody says the $20 bill has the symbols of the towers going down.
Right.
And, you know, I've studied that, and I've looked at it, and it's just amazing that on the $20 bill, when you do these two folds, and you can, you know, find that on the Internet anywhere to do it, this bill was modified in September of 1998, you know, well before the incident. And when you fold it up, the thing you see on the towers, where the towers there's burning going on, they haven't fallen yet. On the left side of the bill is the word American, and that was the American Airlines flight. And on the right-hand side of the bill is the word United right next to the other tower, and the other plane was a United Airlines jet. And when you fold up the $20 bill, you have to fold it up to look like an airplane to allow these symbols to pop out. So it actually, the planes that knocked it down are the shape you have to make the $20 bill in to reveal these patterns. And the $20 bill, 9/11, if you do 9 plus 11, that equals 20. So when you look at all those things, and the other thing is it was the 254th day of the new millennium, and
right,
there were a total of 254 passengers on the planes.
Okay, is all this coincidence, or is it so far numerically beyond coincidence?
Well, I don't believe in the word coincidence. I really think that's us trying to grasp a deeper sense of reality.
No, I disagree with that, Scott. There are coincidences. I mean, come on. There
Give me an
are.
Example, Art. What's an example of a coincidence? Just something, a recent coincidence for you. It's deja vu, coincidence. I understand why people might believe in those things, but from a numerical perspective, there's no coincidences. You know, if there were coincidences, the lottery might be a little easier to figure out. There's just a lot of things that are explained naturally through numbers that coincidence isn't really part of the equation. And so that's just how I see it. I don't know if I'm right or wrong. But
can't you take a series of numbers, as you have done with the number of passengers on any given aircraft, and sort of make them work after the fact?
I believe you can interpret numbers. You can manage numbers to say what you want. People do it every day in business and statistics. And
well, not what you just did. Isn't that what you just did?
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, it's not like I had to twist the numbers around or anything. I mean, they're all very simple addition facts. You know, there's so many of them. And the fact that New York City is the 11th state and there's 11 letters in New York City and all that, sure, you know, you can call it coincidence if you want, but I try to find deeper meaning in things, and I really believe that we live in a time dimension it's just a momentary lapse of reason, and we're in this time where we're going, it's like a lesson we're learning for some higher understanding that we're going to go through. You know, you talk about paradigm shifts and dimensions and things like that, and I think between Y2K, 9/11, and all the things that are happening in the world today, this is time for that
shift.
Okay,
but Scott, my name is Arthur W. Bell.
Right.
11 letters.
And here we are on 9/11. And what's really weird about today, Art, you picked...
Not yet.
Oh, sorry.
It's
we
not,
picked
it's
today.
Not 9/11 yet.
What do you mean?
It's not the 11th yet.
Oh, no. I mean, what's really interesting about today, that you chose today to do this show, is 9/11/2001. You know, they're trying to figure out all these patterns of why they chose that date. And some people said it was because Osama's friend got killed on that date or something. There's a lot of different ideas. But then Madrid, the train bombings in Madrid happened exactly 911 days later. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was in March of 2004. And here we are today, and today is exactly 911 days from Madrid. And we're getting ready to experience, you know, our anniversary of the five years here. So, you know, maybe there's nothing to that. But at the same time, I really feel I see things through numbers, and I believe numbers are a wake-up mm-hmm. call for myself to understand what I'm trying to do. And so that's how I interpret it.
Yeah, who am I to say? I mean, you do see everything through numbers, as you point out. All right, let's jump ahead. Everybody, including myself, is very, very curious about the Mayans and their calendar. Of course, they stopped at, 12, 21, 2012, something like that, right?
12, 21, 12.
And everybody wants to know why they stopped there. Does this mean the end of time? Is it just when they got sick of making calendars? Is it what?
Yes, it's unbelievable mathematics again. The Mayans were all about the number 13. They had a 13-month calendar. They celebrated 13 in all ways, and they made a prediction that the end of time was going to be on December 21st, 2012, and we're rapidly approaching that date. And I think that might be a misinterpretation. I don't think it's the end of time. I believe they mean it's the end of time as we know it. And it's the end of this calendar that dominates our world, which is called the Gregorian calendar. It's the old modified Roman calendar. And like I explained to you early in the show, that all the Roman numerals add up to 666, and it disguises us from understanding numbers. I believe the calendar had that same intent. It disguised us from understanding time, because I'm also a human calendar, Art. You can pick any date, and I can calculate within a second or two what day of the week it was on.
June 17th, 1945.
Sunday.
Damn.
And
Father's Day is Sunday, as a matter of fact.
Yes, and June 17th falls on Sunday. There's a pattern to it, but there's an algorithm that I can do in my mind. And, Art, I was in the Air Force, and I... my supervisor's kid failed math, and he asked me to help him out. And the school called me up after that, and then the district called me up after that. And I got out of the Air Force to start doing this human calculator thing. And I was leaving on 8/8/88, and I had nothing left. I had to, you know, forfeit whatever I had left. It's a long story. But anyway, I was sitting in front of a public library in West Palm Beach, Florida, waiting for a plane ride that my sister had bought me to move to Phoenix, and I found a little book in the library, and this guy had an idea that there's a pattern to the calendar. And so I sat down, I studied it for a little bit, I wrote it out, and I got on the plane later that day, and when I landed in Phoenix, Arizona, I had this formula wired into my brain, and any date I hear, I can calculate the day of the week, and it happens instantly. And so to understand time and the way that we organize it and see it now, and to be able to do what 99.9% of the population can't do, knowing what day their birthday or Christmas is going to be, or any other day for that matter, this calendar has turned off our brain to time. It doesn't allow us to understand time around us. It's a man-made ruler of time. And if you had a ruler with 12 inches on it, and all the inches were different lengths, we'd have a lot of problems. We wouldn't be able to measure things, and that's how our calendar is. It's a measurement of time, and there's 12 months, but every month has a different length.
That's right.
It doesn't allow us to know what day of the week anything is on. And so on 9/9/99, that day that I discovered the nine theory and the matrix, was a total, it wasn't supposed to be that way. That was the day I was introducing my calendar that I've invented that's based off the Mayan calendar. It's called the Human Calendar. And it incorporates the 13-month concept, and every month has 28 days. And what it does is 28 is a perfect number because it's 4 weeks. Every month has the same number of days. It's easy mental math for us. And every number would always be the same day of the week. The first.
What happens to your calendar during a leap year?
Well, I'm working on that. I'm going to introduce I have four options on how to correct that. I'm going to introduce that in 2012 because what's really strange, Art, is this is the first year, 2005, that starts on a Sunday, and I have a zero day as the first day of the year on my calendar because 13 times 28 is only 364. So that's why I'm trying to learn how to count zero in all things we do, and time is obviously the most relevant.
Okay, so you're still working on that.
Well, it's done. The calendar, you can download that for free at thehumancalendar.com. And all I did was line up the 365 days of this year under a 13-month, 28 days, because my calendar has to have a Sunday as the first day, and this year did that. And it doesn't happen again until 2012. And so in 2012, I will show people how to manage the leap year as well as manage a 365-day year so that everybody would be a human calendar and know what day of the week every date's on. And as far as the Mayan calendar goes, I combine two things. The Mayan calendar makes the prediction of December 21st, 2012, and the Bible talks about at the end of time there's going to be a seven-year apocalypse. And if you add those two together, at the end of 2012 plus 7, you end up at the end of year 2019. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the year 2020 will be that year that we see time clearly as it was meant to be. And so it's a symbolic number, 2020, 2020 vision. And so that's when I believe that this calendar, this human calendar that's a basic Mayan calendar incorporating the number zero, which they knew about, but they called it the day out of time. They didn't number it. And numbering it with zero is what makes the difference. And so I believe that we're going to go through a transition. We're going to get rid of this Roman calendar that we're using because today, Art, is September 9th. And the word sept is the Latin word for seven. But September is the ninth month. When you say 9/11, you say September 11th, you're literally saying 7/11. And 7/11 are the lucky numbers. And I believe that our luck ran out that day on 9/11.
You don't think that the people who organized, hijacked those aircraft and attacked us knew the kind of numerical answers to the questions with regard to how many people were on a given aircraft, the flight numbers. You mentioned the 254th day of the year. They could not possibly, Scott, have known all of this prior to their actions.
All of them except for the number of passengers on the plane. The flight numbers were easily could be chosen because
that's true.
Everything you said is possible except for the number of passengers. So if you want to call that a coincidence, that's cool. But I really do think that whoever came up with this plan thought this out, because these are religious-based ideas and religion and calendars. You know, religion is just man trying to avoid the end of time of their own, you know, death.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes.
You know, so religion and time all come together. And I mean, why wouldn't they take the time to consider all these numbers? They have the people, they have the time, and they understand us. I mean, you know, we're English is the most dominant language on the planet, so it's not like we're a third world country.
Mm-hmm. You talk about number patterns in the Bible, Scott. There are people doing, as you know, Bible code work. Now, if they're not using the number zero in their work, is it valid?
Well, zero, I believe, is the number that answers the question about a creator. You know, before there was one, there was none, and there were no trees.
My point. That's my point exactly.
You know, so yeah, I think zero is going to answer a lot of questions that we just couldn't comprehend or understand not so long ago.
Yes, but if those people doing the Bible code work were to use zero, that would change every result they've come up with so far, which is pretty impressive when you look at it.
It's very impressive, and I have a theory about that, Art. Thank you for asking about that, because I hope somebody's listening that might take this up. But I believe that, well, the Bible is just all numbers, and if you can't read the original language of the Bible, it's Hebrew and Greek, and every letter in their alphabet is also their numbers. So every word in the Bible, every letter is a number, and I believe there's a dimension, many dimensions of numbers there. And I think America, this is just my guess, Art, but I think America is here for a reason. It just appeared out of nowhere in the past few hundred years. You know, everybody else has been around and, you know, pretty developed. And we're a very young country. It's all about timing. It happened for a reason. There's 13 colonies. And so if every American has a Social Security number with 9 digits in it, and I believe that if one of these Bible code guys would stick a zero in front of our Social Security numbers and punch in this number pattern to the proper algorithm, it would reveal all basic facts about each and every one of us here in this country. And so it's just an idea. But the Bible really blew me away, Art, because I'm a Christian now, but I was not even until 99. In 1999, I went through like a personal Y2K with numbers. You know, I invented the calendar. I discovered the 9 pattern, the matrix, a lot of stuff was going on, and that was the year that I became a Christian. And for many years, I had very close personal friends that asked me to go to Bible study and things like that. And what I promised them is I'd go listen to their Bible studies, but what I wanted to do is look at the Bible from a numerical perspective. Mm-hmm. And there's three things that blew me away. First off, the first letter, the first sentence of the Bible has mathematical patterns about the number 7 that are unbelievable. It would take a supercomputer to figure out a language that you could insert all these 7s into one sentence. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The last word in the Bible is amen. And if you add up the letters without even knowing what the word is, it adds up exactly to 99. And I believe that's the marker. That's an end-of-file marker that we went through Y2K because computers were all wired to end at 99. So we didn't know if at the end it was 9999 or December 31st, 1999. So the Bible ends with the word 99. And then the really strange, not strange, just amazing about the Bible is there's 1,188 chapters in the Bible. And if you divide that by 2, you get 594 and 594. And if you go to the dead middle of the Bible, it's Psalm 118:8. And if you add up all the chapters, it's 1,188. And the exact center of the Bible is Psalm 118:8. And before Psalm 118 is Psalm 117, which is the shortest chapter in the Bible. And the one after it, Psalm 119, is the longest chapter in the Bible. And the center verse of the Bible says, "It is better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man." That is the exact center of the Bible, and I believe it's for those people on the fence about how they feel about it.
All right, Mr. Mann, hold it right there. We're at the top of the hour. When we come back, we're going to open the lines for Scott Flansburgh, the human calculator from Manila in the Philippines. Boy, this has been a fascinating one. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.